Welcome to the Red Bearded Predator podcast, where average folks talk about walleyes, whitetails, Wisconsin outdoors, and beyond.
It's like a beast. Oh my God.
Are you kidding me?
That's a nice eye.
Yeah. That was a fast one. Holy cow.
All right, folks, welcome to another installment of RBP Weekly. Got myself, Eric, got my two co-hosts, Bud and Andy. Tonight, we're going to talk about big things happening in the state of Wisconsin for us. We had Bud and Andy make their debut in the Duck Creek Walleye Series over this past weekend. And I believe they took 36th place, is that correct?
Something like that.
Yeah. And I ended up getting a nice Tom down here in southwestern Wisconsin. So it was a pretty big weekend across the board for all three of us. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hanging in there.
And we got Bud. And we got Bud playing hurt tonight. He's got a messed up voice, so he's just bear with us tonight because he can't. He can't talk very good, but he's hanging in there.
It sounds like I'm going through puberty, so just think of me as yeah. Like hurt or something.
Are that you guys drinking anything good tonight? Are the good
same old.
Good old standbys. Bud's got his coolers.
I got the silver bullet.
Andy said you said you were making a drink.
Yeah, I Canadian Hunter tonight.
Nice. Well, Andy, if you want to pose a question to me and Bud and see what you'd rather do, lead us off with the question.
So because I forgot and I don't think very quick on my feet, I'm usually a thinker that needs to marinate on things a little bit, but I obviously didn't do my homework. But, so, would you rather shoot a banded duck or goose? And I guess for those that don't know, if you do shoot a banded duck or goose, you can call a number and you can enter your number. You can do it online too, and it'll tell you like where the duck was banded or the goose was banded, approximately age, the sex, the warning area. So it kind of gets you some cool information. Or would you rather shoot a double bearded turkey?
Alright, so a banded bird or a double bearded turkey? Alright, Bud, I'll let you lead off.
I'd probably rather shoot a banded bird. Just because you can actually learn some of the history behind it. As far as age, where it was I have shot a banded goose already. But it was kind of mediocre because it was banded like 10 miles away that year and stuff like that. But you could end up shooting a banded bird that came down from Saskatchewan that was like from 3 years ago, something like that. And trying to get like something that where you learned that that bird traveled so far would be good. Or shooting a double bearded tom. You're just shooting double bearded tom. You're not really learning anything about it.
That's fair. After thinking about it, I would honestly, I've never hunted waterfowl, but I would go with the banded bird due to I already shot a triple bearded tom, so I already got that off the bucket list. So, but I think that would be interesting. I didn't know you could learn where they come from and all that type of thing. I always think it's super interesting to like learn about migration patterns, and I agree with Bud on that one.
I had to put my input on comments. I'd rather catch a tagged fish.
Yeah.
That's something I haven't done. I'd like to catch a tagged fish.
Sure. There's actually a lake that is up north where I catch those smallmouth. All of them are tagged for like studies, or a lot of them are tagged for studies and whatnot. So it's pretty cool catching those. Is that true, Andy? The bike buck sighting, Robert is saying you can get a reward for banded birds. Is that true? I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, there are some. I believe there are some leg bands that you can get like $100 on, and I believe there are goose collars too, where it's like a plastic collar that's around their neck. Collared birds, I want to say those are up there. Those are like $250 or $500.
Wow, it's like winning the lottery.
Usually, those are the birds that you know the wildlife industry wants to really track and really understand where that bird went. Because I mean, that's the whole part of the banded program. It's just to find out migration patterns, how average, you know. Average age, or you know what those birds are doing.
Cool. Robert was saying that on the East Coast, I believe he's saying the collars are priced and whatnot over there. So
yeah, the East Coast, like you get out onto some of those, you know, open water, some of those big water birds, you know, the scoters and stuff like that. That'd be a really cool hunt. I'd really enjoy doing something like that. That would be awesome.
Oh, it's kind of interesting what he's saying they do over there. So specific colors are worth different rewards. So okay. Be kind of fun out there. Get the binoculars out there just to see what color bands they have to see which ones are worth shooting the most.
Right.
So
make your shots count.
Yep. So
go for green.
And I suppose if you get the most expensive one, you might as well go for the lottery on that day.
Right.
So very cool. Very cool. I like that question. Thanks for participating along, guys. Really appreciate that. So you guys made your debut on the Duck Creek Walleye series. How was the overall experience? I don't even want to talk about the fishing yet. Environment, atmosphere, how was it for you guys?
As far as the tournament?
Yeah.
I think it was a very well-run tournament. I mean, guys were on time. We got our rules meeting in and out right away in the morning. And we got launched 30 miles north. We still ended up sitting around for an hour before we could fish.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think the layout and, for lack of a better term, the flow of the tournament went well. I really enjoyed the, you know, using the app, doing the catch, photograph, release, in the video. I think that does wonders for the fishery. It doesn't impact it as much, you know. Because, I mean, let's be real here, you're out there to catch those big fish. So, you know, you're not damaging that fishery by getting that die off.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I know, Robert, you're over on the East Coast. I know you don't fish too much, but do you know how they're running tournaments over there? If it's they're doing picture-type tournaments where they release this fish? Same thing with Utahns, and you know how they're running tournaments in Illinois. It'd be interesting to see what you guys' perspective is on that. That's good that it ran smooth and everything like that. Everybody was friendly, it sounds like. So
yeah.
It sounds like you guys got off at, what, 6 a.m. or so?
We had the boat launched by 6. We couldn't fish till 7, though.
Okay. Did you get to the spot you were targeting in time?
Oh yeah, we ended up kind of scouted on our way in.
Okay.
We took our time getting to our spot.
Yeah, I think heading to our spot, I don't think we ever got the boat up on plane.
No. Huh? We never went above 5 miles.
Yeah, we just
got. And we still ended up going and anchoring up.
Oh really? Just to wait it out. So, where I don't want to stay specific locations, but I think this is general enough. If you guys were on the east shore or west shore, what shore were you guys fishing?
We were on the east shore.
East shore?
We were fishing a reef on the east shore.
Okay. So, in terms of the morning bite, how was that for you guys?
Not as good as the pre-fishing days.
Yeah.
When I pre-fished that spot, Andy was with me two of the days, Tony was with me one of the days. And I spent a total of maybe 45 minutes there over 3 days, and I boated 5 fish in that short amount of time. And that wasn't the case on Saturday.
What factors do you think went into that change?
No wind. And when I was pre-fishing, the most guys I saw there were 2 boats. Tournament day, we probably had 25.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a lot of fishing pressure and even a lot of traffic. I mean, where we were fishing, it's not a secret spot, right? Everybody knows about it. Anybody that fishes the bay knows where that spot is. So that would be my only gripe about the tournament is guys know that that's a spot. They know that's a spot that holds fish and a lot of people fish it. But yet, you still get those knuckleheads that go through their full tilt, ripping through. You got 15 miles or so of bay and you got to rip through there. You couldn't go around that point. Come on.
Yeah.
A bit of my, but, so I think just a lot of that boat noise and boat traffic, I think, really played a big part.
A question off.
The weather conditions were completely different from any other day that we were out there.
Yeah. 2 out of the 3 days when I pre-fished that, there was a good 15 to 20 mile an hour wind going on. And for the day of the tournament, we were at, 0 to 3?
Yeah.
Huh. That's kind of funny. I think you guys got that weather that I was talking about the day I was turkey hunting, because I remember texting you Friday morning. It was dead by me, so that front must have moved in by you guys on that Saturday then. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
In terms of, I know it was Pensacoe to, where was the cutoff on the East Shore?
What's it pronounced? Shooters or Shadoors Dock or okay. Something like that?
Okay.
Shadoors.
So, with 54 boats, do you think it would help them lengthening that area, or did you think it was enough area to fish?
No, I think
there's enough. There's more than enough room. It's just a matter of guys knew where the fish were concentrated.
Right.
Fish are concentrated shallow right now and on structure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
To put it in perspective, that relatively similar boundaries, the tournament that we used to fish, the Fox River, the Walleye Classic.
Those have smaller boundaries.
Yeah, so even a little bit less boundary, and we've had 115 boats in that 1 year. So, I don't think boundary increasing it would do anything.
I gotcha. So, what patterns did you start off with in the morning?
There was a crankbait bite. We had 2 crankbaits picked out that were picking up all of our fish. And throughout the entire day, 3 or 4 fish came on the 2 crankbaits that we picked out. Our pattern held up. It was just going to make midday adjustments.
I gotcha. Yes, that's what it sounded like. Just midday seemed to be the struggle. What time period was that for you guys?
Well, we picked up our 2nd fish at 9:30. We picked up our 3rd fish at 2:35.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big gap.
That 9:30 fish, we were out scouting. We scouted that fish out.
Huh, wow.
Because we only caught 1 fish actually off that reef, which was our biggest fish, but we only caught one fish off our actual starting pattern.
Wow.
Right, or three, we switched out.
Yeah, I mean, the fish that we were on quality fish. That wasn't the problem, you know what I mean? For considering where we placed, trying to look at the bright side of things, because I was a little disappointed in our placement. I thought it was going to be a better day, but, you know, we only registered four fish. And there were guys that were all around us in the rankings that registered all five fish. So if we would have got a fourth fish in there, that would have really helped our rank.
Huh.
Or a fifth fish in it.
Just curious, what were the size of the fish you caught approximately?
As far as poundage?
Poundage, length, either or.
Well, our biggest one was 25 and 3/4, which weighed out at just over 7. And then we had a 24 and 3/4, a 23 and 3/4. And then we had one short fish at 20 and a half.
Oh, wow.
And I think our 20 and a half fish was 3 pounds.
Oh, you guys were in quality fish, real quality fish then.
Yeah, I mean, if we could have caught two more nicer fish to get rid of our 20-inch, I mean, yeah, we would have did really good.
Right.
So the fish you caught in the afternoon, I'm assuming that was on a crankbait bite too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was right as the storm was rolling in.
It was chaos.
It was one of those things, like, we were getting kind of down and out. Because we literally picked up those two fish with like 20 minutes to go in the tournament. We added 12 pounds. And it was kind of an eerie situation. We were watching a thunderstorm roll in, coming across the bay. And anybody that's fished in a thunderstorm, they'll understand the sound of rod tips make. There's electricity in the air. You actually hear crackling, zapping, and we were actually dealing with that.
Wow.
Where we were actually pulling rods out of rod holders to get them out of the air. And I decided I was going to turn us to go back towards the ramp, at least, and we were going to pick up lines early just to get out of there. And as I made the turn, we picked up our first fish. So it must have either been that erratic turn or the speed triggered it. And then as we were processing that fish, our second one.
Interesting.
So, I mean, whether it's luck of the draw or we did something right, but we were trying to grind it out till the end. But at the same time, we lucked out by me wanting to pull the plug a little bit early. We picked up 12 pounds.
But I guess to add into that, you know, going back to the boat traffic, when we picked up those fish, there was really only us and maybe two or three other boats out there off of that point at that time. And we went from no wind, dead calm water to snotty water, higher winds, temperature drop, rain, a complete atmosphere change. So, you know, and then I do think, you know, picking up that fish, I do think it was, like Bud said, that erratic, the turn or the speed adjustment or something that triggered that fish. I'm willing to bet we had a lot of follows that day that just fish that wouldn't come in.
Yeah, we marked fish. I mean, the entire 8 hours we were out there, we were on fish.
Right.
There was hardly a time where my graph was blank. We just could not get them to commit.
Yeah, that makes sense. What do you think was the hardest part about this tournament?
Like the tournament or the fishing day?
Like weather, competition, trying to pattern.
It's the competition against the fish.
Yeah.
If you're looking at it as just a fishing day, most likely we couldn't adjust to the added fishing pressure to the area.
Yeah.
That was probably what we got beat because we couldn't adjust to the fishing pressure.
Okay.
I think that really changed the attitude of the fish in that area.
Okay.
Because there was guys that we were fishing alongside of all day in the tournament that finished eighth. You know, we were literally making the same passes as that guy, and he finished eighth. But obviously, he knew how to get the speed or what bait they wanted. So, I mean, he figured it out. We were on the quality fish. It was just a matter of we couldn't figure out how to get a bite.
Gotcha. I'm going to pose this question to both of you. If you would have changed one thing from the tournament that you would have done differently, what would it have been?
Looking back at it?
Yep.
And looking at the last fish we picked up, I should have dropped the big motor, and instead of slowing down, I should have sped up. The highest speed we went was 2 miles an hour. And I'm thinking, looking at it now, I think we should have really went after a reaction bite, and we should have been trolling 2.5-3 miles an hour, something like that, cover more ground, really trying to pick apart a really active fish.
That makes sense. Thoughts, Andy?
I think Bud's got a real good point. I mean, I agree with that 110%. Just to throw in a different answer, just to be different, I would say location. Find more of a unpressured bite. Maybe that could be another option. You know, I'm not sure where, but, you know, not sure if that would have made a difference either, you know. Because like Bud said, there were guys that were fishing next to us, or around us, or near us, I should say. And they obviously figured it out. They figured out the bite. They figured out the subtle difference between us and them that put their fish in the boat.
Cool. How was the weigh-in then? Pretty well ran, pretty efficient.
There really wasn't a weigh-in.
Well,
it's all done on the app. At 3 o'clock, I knew what place we finished.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So was there a banquet or anything at the end of it, or how did that work out? That's, I guess, my question.
We do have to turn in. They give us a paint stick with a number on it, and we have to go turn that in. And they had a tent set up with, I don't know, it's like Great Lakes Fishery Association or something. And they were selling
Great Lakes Sport Fishing.
Sport Fishing, that, yeah, something like that. And they're pushing memberships and stuff like that. And they were selling burgers and sodas for a fundraiser. You know, and then for the guys that stuck around, like you got to watch a payout. You know, and then they did all the announcements, and then they gave away some custom painted lures and stuff like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I guess that would be the one thing that I did miss comparing tournaments, was the post fishing. You know, the weigh-in, watching the bags come in, watching the live board where they're getting, you know, where they're writing the numbers up, and everyone's socializing and drinking and having a good time and or razzing each other or whatever it may be, you know. But they didn't have that. But I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, turnout, location, and it was the first one. You know, I mean, it was the first one. There's no doubt in my mind that I think that post-fishing event will get better.
Cool. When's the next tournament for you guys?
May 22nd.
Yeah, May. That's right. Sorry. There's a third leg in June.
Okay.
Yeah, May 22nd, and then there's one in June.
Awesome. Well, I bet you guys are looking forward to getting back on the water May 22nd then, and trying to improve. So hopefully get a top 10 redemption. Next time. Yep, redemption. So, yeah, thanks for sharing. I appreciate you guys talking about your debut, and glad to hear it. Sounds like you guys have fun, so awesome. I guess.
And I'll spill a little beans on the bike. And I think one of the big differences we had was we were running shaky shads instead of flicker shads. But for anybody that's curious, that's a flicker shad. And that's a shaky shad. It's a lot bigger of a profile. And I really think that made a difference in it. 3 out of 4 fish came on the shaky shad. And I just think it's different. It's a different action and a different rattle. And it's a new bait on the market. And I think that's kind of what helped us out pick up the fish we did.
Huh. Interesting.
There's a lot of guys out there, they're running flicker shads. And I think the fish are just getting used to them.
Well, you opened up another bag of worms right there. Is there a different sound with that shaky shad then too?
It's a totally different rattle.
Huh.
So we'll see how good my microphone is here. I don't even know where my microphone is. Can you hear that?
Yep. What was that first one, bud?
The first one was the flicker shad.
Okay, I want to do that second one again then. And that's the shaky shad.
This is flicker shad. That's shaky shad.
Oh yeah, that has a lot more pop to it.
It's a lot higher. I think they run like a smaller BB or something in it. So it's a little higher pitched kind of rattle. And it's a bigger bait, so you're getting a lot more water displacement with it. So as far as that lateral line on the walleye, you know, if you got a bigger bait, it's throwing a lot more water displacement.
That makes sense why it potentially could have been more of a reaction bite too.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Well.
Because then our other bait was we were running a jointed bait. So it was a shaky shad and a jointed bait were our two go-to baits. And the same thing there with the jointed bait, you're getting a lot more erratic action to it, a lot more water displacement.
Huh.
So that's my little tip for the bite we're on.
There you guys go. Go to the store and buy a bunch of shaky shads now.
I'm telling you right now, man, shaky shad, it's a solid bait. Walleye, it's one of the Walleye Nation creations makes it. Like, it's a little bit more, it's like 5-something for a bait, but colors are top-notch, hooks are top-notch.
The paint colors that they have for them, they almost look like custom-painted lures. They're very high quality. Down to the small details, like, you know, the eyes.
Yeah.
The eyes and the hooks, they have good quality hooks on them.
It's like a solid welded hook.
Yeah.
Like on a normal treble, you got the one that's kind of just hanging out there, it always breaks off. Like their hooks are solid soldered.
Yeah.
Wow.
They're very high quality bait. Like
yeah. For that price, you can't go wrong. Now we're going to have to redo that spring crankbait video, top 5. We're going to add that in there. That's okay. You guys want to add anything else before we transition to my turkey hunt, I guess?
Sign up for the Duck Creek series. We need more boats. Not that I want the competition or anything, but bigger field, bigger payouts, why not? Bigger party.
I like it. Anything to add, Andy?
No. That should be good.
All right. Right on, guys. Thanks. Appreciate that. So, should we get into my turkey hunt? I know there's not much to recap with Bud's season A. I think you're pretty much skunked. Is that... I don't know.
Well, to his defense, I mean, it was kind of a crappy timing.
It was. I had one day, and probably the worst day of my season was opening day up here.
Yeah.
I think any other day would have been good, except for opening day, because opening day was right on a cold snap.
Yeah. Just to put my two cents into it, I was actually traveling for the work that day as Bud was hunting, and I snapped him a picture, and I was driving from Madison to Fond du Lac, and I got 3 or 4 inches of snow in like an hour. Just wacky. You know those pop-up...
I actually did not deal with any snow hunting.
Yeah.
I drove through snow leaving Green Bay to go up there, but there was no snow up there. But it was still cold.
Yeah. And
it was only like 30, 40 degrees up there.
It's
been in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, it was super weird for me, because I was actually out that day hunting the opener. And in west of Madison, where I hunt, it was morning low of 23 degrees, I believe. It was chilly. Birds were pretty active, though, in the morning there, because sun was out, heated up pretty quick. So it felt like middle of spring, and halfway across the state, it felt like the middle of winter. So the opener was interesting.
Yeah.
But you did have an encounter with two birds, didn't you, Bud?
I guess. So, we talked last time I was on, pretty much my whole plan was I was going to run roads and watch for sign in the roads, whether it's tracks or strutting marks, little scratchings, or seeing birds, anything like, and then I would stop in creek bottoms, I'd stop on top ridges, and just call. That was my plan. And I found a hot road where I was getting a lot of sign on the road, between tracks and strutting. So I'm like, okay, I know this is a good road. I know there's birds here. At least in the last day, there's been birds here. And then I stopped at his power line. I'm like, yeah, this is perfect spot. Road is full of tracks. There's got to be birds around here. So I get out, and I'm calling, not getting anything, give him a shot gobble. There's not nothing. And I literally turn around and I go walk back to my truck, and literally 60 yards on the other side of my truck, two birds fly up out of the power lines. Never made a sound. It's power lines plus the pipeline up there, so it's kind of marshy area too. So whether it was, I wouldn't think it's two hens nesting, because they never nest next to each other. So I'm thinking, I don't know if it was two hens hanging out or a tom and a hen. I don't know, but all I know is I turned around and two birds were flying on the other side of my truck. That was my main encounter.
Yeah.
And then I saw like another hen nesting, but I did not have any solid encounters of birds outside of the two that were right next to my truck as I'm trying to call it.
Yeah, I just had to bust your balls on that, because when I got that text, I was laughing my ass off. Well,
what am I going to do?
Did you have fun at least, though?
Well, looking back at it, I should have at least stopped at Pelican's while I was up there to buy some meat.
Yeah.
But I was so pressed with time, and I didn't stop at Pelican's, and I didn't get anything.
You went home with nothing. And you burnt up a lot of gas.
Literally, full tank of gas, man. I pulled my tank up Tuesday on my way to work, and then I had to fill it again up Thursday morning when I went fishing.
So is this like what they talk about when they talk about calories per dollar spent? This is one of the most inefficient trips you've ever had.
Yeah, ratio going.
That's funny. That's funny.
And diesel's going out.
Sounds a lot like goose hunting, field hunting.
Yeah. The amount of freaking wear and tear on a vehicle for us to shoot a goose is crazy.
Yeah.
Anything with me trying to shoot a turkey?
I do have to say that's one of my favorite reasons why I have the Ford Party, because I can drive miles with that thing and it's perfect for turkey hunting. Don't have to worry about hauling stands or anything like that. It's literally my shotgun and my vest, then I throw my turkey right in the trunk. So.
Yeah, I should have took the Ford Focus. Should have took the wife's car.
Yeah.
My luck, though, I would have probably got it stuck in a sand pit or something like that.
Driving through
a last time I went turkey hunting, I got my truck stuck. So I was lucky I didn't get a truck stuck this year.
Yeah. So, well, we might as well get into. I actually harvested something. My fuel cost, whatever, to meat harvested was pretty solid. So, yeah.
I haven't even heard your story yet, so I'm intrigued.
Well, obviously, I didn't kill anything on the opener. Just ran out of time in real estate. It's tough when you got to get a bird down by 8 o'clock in the morning. So. But ended up going out the Friday of opening week and pretty much did the same thing I did before because I knew there was birds in the area. So basically did I walked up a big ridge, and it's a really great property. There's a creek bottom, a trout stream. There's pines, there's open hardwoods, there's thick stuff, there's egg fields. Pretty much every type of habitat you need, this place has it. And
All right, interjection.
Sure.
Is this DNR land or MFL private?
MFL.
Okay.
Yep. And I mean, Bud put a tip in the video today. That's a tip I'll give you. Don't overlook the MFL, the VPAs, the FCLs. It just seems like they don't, even the IHAPs, where you can just hunt turkeys. A lot of guys shy away from those for some reason. I don't know why, but I don't run into much for pressure on those areas. So, little nugget for you guys. But I was familiar with this property. I deer hunted it, talked to a guy at work about it who has hunted in the past, and he says there's typically birds on it, and there's a lot of birds out there. So, basically how the hunt went down, parked the car in the valley, walked up the hill, sat on the highest point on the ridge, and basically let the birds tell me where to go. So I had birds to my south and birds to my north. And based off of my experience on Wednesday, those birds didn't seem very likely to be called up the ridge because both of those ridge sides are fairly steep. Like, this is typical bluff country, I don't know, steep degree hills. So I went towards further back because I heard a distant gobble where I was like, no way is this bird gonna come in. So of course I did a couple tree yelps, just a couple soft yelps, just to let them know that a hen was in the area. And the birds to the south and north of me ended up going to pastures and basically showed no interest. They were just gobbling the gobble. But that distant gobble, he was reacting to me. You could definitely tell as soon as I yelped or clucked or did anything, bam, he was right on it. But since he was so far, I was kind of like, whatever, I'll just sit here. So I actually just stood in for like 15, 20 minutes or so listening to birds, listen to the morning wake up.
That's being nice.
Yeah. So, ended up sitting on that ridge top. Yeah. I ended up setting up on that ridge top, and the bird made a beeline right towards me. So we went back and forth probably for about 7 to 10 minutes or so. And he was just not committing. So I was like, I got to cut off the call. just to make him question if it was a hen or not, because I know you can overcall.
Yeah.
So I waited about 20 minutes and made one more series of calls, and he was just hung up. I don't know. There's a fence line right there. Part of the fence line is up. Part of the fence line is down. So I was like, maybe he's held up on that fence. I'm not sure. So I was like, I got to make some sort of move. So I didn't move any closer. I did a big beeline around because I had thick stuff in between me and him so he couldn't see me from that ridge top. And ended up getting on a edge of pines and some thick stuff. And that little movement to the north where those open pines were ended up being the ticket, because I ended up doing one series of calls. 1 minute later, he was coming in. I saw him.
Nice.
Yeah. And he ended up working from my left to right. He was at like 45 yards, but it was really thick. Then the more right he got, the more open it got. So I had to wait patient for a shot because he was just cruising. It was like a buck and rut. He didn't want to stop at all. And ended up smoking him at 23 yards, and that was awesome. So come to find out, though, I went to go check out that fence. And at that series of fence where I was trying to call him through, there was good fence there. That movement of, I probably moved 40 yards. There is a gap probably about 5 to 10 feet wide in the fence. That's where he came through. So it shows if you're having a bird hang up and you are hunting right by a fence line, make a move, because that bird might just need a little guidance to find an open spot in the fence. Because he was hammering, like, it was no doubt he was interested. I mean, he gobbled probably about 5-10 times without me even calling, so he was just ready to rock. So you guys got any questions up to this point about the hunt?
No, it sounds like it's a pretty good time.
Yeah.
It's, you know, with my hunt coming up, it's, I don't know what the word, inspiring to hear that, to hear how, like, you know, give it time. If something doesn't happen, make something happen.
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing I've learned out throughout. I mean, I've been hunting for 2 or 3 years now. It just seems like sometimes I don't want to call turkeys stupid, but I don't know. Turkeys know how to survive, I guess. That's what they know how to do. And sometimes they just need a little guidance, really. Like, because they can't figure out how to get over a fence. But yet you see them fly across the highway or fly over Bud's truck, you know, but they can't get over a fence. So, but that's all I got. Beautiful Tom. I got the fan with salt on it right now and whatnot, trying to clean it up for my mom. It's her Mother's Day present. So, yeah. So, yeah.
Happy Mother's Day, D.
Yeah. She knows it's coming. So. Yeah, but it was a fun hunt, and like I recommend, I know guys through Facebook and other forums that I've been on are actually saying the turkey populations are going down in southwestern Wisconsin. Based off my...
You shoot like 4 birds a year.
Yeah, that's true. But what I do, though, so it doesn't hurt the population... I shoot 1 bird off each different property, so it's just not hammer 4 birds in one area. I try and keep it spread out. But, I mean, anecdotally, I haven't seen a big change. I've seen lots of birds. I don't know. Just based off my experience.
There's still more birds than there was 20 years ago.
Yes, that is true. So
20 years ago, there wasn't even a turkey in Wisconsin.
Yeah. I think a lot of guys forget that too. So. And
I want to say what the first Wisconsin turkey hunt was, what, mid 90s?
Yeah, it was mid 90s. I just remember there was a lottery for it. That's all I remember.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there was like one season. Like you had 5 days for the year. That was it.
Yeah. And, I mean, people will be like, why do you need to shoot 4 birds? I mean, if they got the tags available.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, if they got the tags available, why not? I mean, and if.
It's not like you're shooting them and like just taking the fan off of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Wouldn't
abuse. Yeah. So I don't know. If it's legal, I'm all for it, you know. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but each person should shoot whatever they want to shoot. So that's all I got when it comes to that. But Andy, we might as well transition to what you got coming up for this week. So you have a season B tag and you're taking Archer. Is he get more pumped by the day? That's my question.
Yeah, he is. I don't know if he's getting excited for the hunt or if he's just getting excited to, you know, be out of school, be out in the woods. It's just going to be kind of a couple of guy days, him and I. We're going to stay at the in-laws' place. They got a cottage up on a lake up north. So we'll be staying there, just him and I. When asked what he wants for food, sounds like steak is going to be on the menu.
Yeah, and I think that's what Archer's excited about is the food. If I know Archer, that's what Archer's excited for.
Yeah, the kid, Bud can vouch for it. And, well, Eric, you've probably seen it too when we're out fishing or ice fishing or whatever. The kid likes his food. He likes his snacks. He, I don't know where he puts it. He's a beanpole too. I mean, he shot up like another foot, it seems like, the last few months. I think he's taller than his mom now. But, yeah, I think he's excited for it. Because... I mean, I've gone turkey hunting, with Bud. I don't know if it was, we didn't hunt hard. We chased that bird around for a little bit, and I've helped him out, and I've helped my brother out, but nothing where it was, like, truly my hunt. So with him coming with me, it's going to be new to both of us, and I can't lie. I'll get a little Hallmark on you. I'm kind of hoping it's going to be our new tradition. That's going to be our thing. So, I think it'll be neat. It'll be fun.
Yeah, that's cool. And I don't know. Just personally, I think there's nothing else better to get a kid or a new hunter involved in for hunting is turkey hunting. I think, other than small game hunting, I think turkey is just a great way to get somebody new involved. Just because you can move... You can joke around. You don't have to be still for that long, But I do have to ask, what is Archer's favorite snack of choice? What is that?
Oh, jeez.
Everything?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to narrow it down.
I have to go with the string cheese and beef stew.
Yeah, well, and as of recently, we figured out he is lactose intolerant, so...
No, that's right, yeah, so more just a beef stick.
So now, yeah, can I just say cured meats of any kind?
Yeah, that's hard to go wrong with that.
Yeah.
I think the most nostalgic type snack food for me, like when it comes to hunting, are those stupid little Snicker bars. Like, that's...
Gotta have them.
I mean, when my dad used to take me hunting, it was all about those Snicker bars. And I remember when I was really young, he used to take hot chocolate and Oreo cookies, and we ate that in the blind. That was another nostalgic type food. I might have to do that for this gun season or something like that. Just hot chocolate and Oreos. But you got any nostalgic snacks or anything that bring you back?
Growing up, me and my dad, we were big grouse hunters. And it was all, it was the fun size Snickers and Pringles. You'd have the tube of Pringles in the front of the truck, the bag of fun size Snickers.
Yeah. Andy, how about anything nostalgic for you?
For me, I would have to say, thanks to my dad, it would probably be the fun size Almond Joy bars. You know, the little coconut.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
He was a fan of those, and kind of ironic this comes up because I was picking on Bud for the, having these in the boat this last weekend, but butterscotch discs, you know, those little yellow butterscotch discs. He didn't have those. Bud had the Werther's out there, but I was like, geez, felt like I was fishing with my dad or my grandpa out there.
Oh, that's awesome.
Whatever.
But other than that, I don't have anything else tonight. You guys, I'll shut her down right now. Sound good?
Sounds good. Good luck to everybody out there doing whatever.
Yeah, whether it's walleye fishing, crappie fishing, inland's opening what, this weekend?
Saturday.
Bunch of stuff. Mushroom hunting, turkey hunting. There's a bunch of stuff to do right now, so hopefully y'all take advantage of it. We live in a great state here. I'm proud of it. So is Bud and Andy. Just get out there.
A lot of opportunities.
That's a good way of saying it. And if you got a second, check us out on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, especially YouTube. Give us a subscribe. We need all the help we can get to, you know, get more devices to create better content for you guys. And so we can keep on doing what we're doing right now. We appreciate you guys tuning in. And for you guys listening to us on the podcast, we appreciate that support as well. Thank you very much, and hope you guys have a good week. And looking forward to a great weekend in the outdoors in Wisconsin. We'll see you guys later.